Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Thank you for joining us whenever or wherever you are listening. You are now rocking with the best. Welcome once again to the Soul on Ice podcast. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. Also hit us up on all of our social media platforms. Big shout out to Brother B, Minister of Social Information, always hooking us up. Today we have a great show. One of the most respected men in the world of hockey is joining us from the LA Kings, the one and only Luke Robitaille. Of course, joining me is one half of Double Trouble. Elijah Roberts is in the house. Akil is just finishing up his year, his first year as a pro, so he should be back pretty soon. E-Double, regular season has just wrapped up. Toronto Maple Leafs has won their first division title in like forever. Connor McDavid hits 100 points. And of course, the Golden Knights are still the favorite. Your thoughts going into the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching a lot of hockey recently, and, you know, it's pretty big for Toronto. This kind of seems like it could be the year that they do it. Although, you know, recently a lot of times we've thought that, but there's just kind of something about this team where they have all the right pieces and they could actually do it. I'm still sticking with what I've said, and I don't think Toronto's coming out of the North. They just haven't sold me enough.
Ooh, you don't even think they're coming out of the North?
No, man. I don't know. But I'm maybe leaning towards them because of how much Winnipeg's been slumping.
Okay.
But I do think Winnipeg's a little bit better. But I don't know. We'll have to see with that. But just looking at a lot of the other divisions, you know, it's going to be pretty good playoffs. It's looking like Washington, Boston, first round, which should be pretty good. Tampa, Florida, which should be pretty good as well. And then, you know, like I said earlier, from before the season even started, Vegas is looking to clinch the President's Trophy tonight as the best team in the league, which I did say.
You did.
You know, I'm probably going to stick with them as favorite to win the cup this year.
I like it. I like it. Elijah Roberts, for those who don't know, is the general manager of the Soul on Ice podcast. He is going to be the one most likely to be running an NHL team in the future. And so we have to respect his call. He's usually pretty right on the nose with that. Brother B, fantasy. You were excited last week because you were making it into the finals of your fantasy pool. How did that go?
12 years of shame put to rest.
Nice.
I am champion.
Champ. What do you win for? What do you win for that?
100,000 bragging rights.
Buddy, go get yourself.
That's more than money right there.
That's it. That's it.
I mean, come on. At least till, you know, the whole off season, I'm on top. So,
what put you over the top on that?
You know, it was actually crazy. I sat Sorokin, who had a great game for the Isles, and Campbell and Talbot both, you know, kind of wet the bed, but still pulled out a win. So, but I actually won on a lot of plus minus and power play points and some key players. You know, the cool thing was I had Robertson and Kaprizov, and so I got to watch them all season. Man, those two, that race for Calder is dope.
Elijah, who's winning the Calder?
As much as I would like to say Robertson, because I do think there is something that shows for a true rookie, in a sense, like Kaprizov playing in the KHL, he's a little bit older. I think just the way he finished the season, he may take that award. You know, Robertson was on that 8-game point streak or whatever it was, and there was a lot of rumblings going on. And then if you watch Kaprizov's last games, he kind of just answered the call and really stepped up in the end. And I believe he's got 51 points in 50 games, and Robertson's got 43 in 50. So I think, you know, just the way Kaprizov finished the season, I think he's going to take it. I would love to see Robertson take it because, you know, he was a teammate of mine, good guy. But I do think that Kaprizov may end up getting it.
All right, you heard it here first from Elijah Roberts, our GM. That's a good pick. I would say. I really haven't been able to watch either of the two for the whole season, so I'm not going to embarrass myself by trying to give some predictions. But we're going to keep this moving because I'm really excited about the rest of this show. Coming up, we have Luke Robitaille, the president of the LA Kings. But before we get to him, I got to chop it up with a good brother. He's doing great work out here for these kids, man. His name is Mo Hassam from Hockey for Youth, whose main mission is to facilitate social inclusion for newcomer and high priority youth of all genders through their free ice hockey and teach program, which we'll learn more about. It's a great conversation, great organization. We need more of these types of organizations, and I'm really happy to have them on the show. So let's get to it, boys. Before we get to our special guests, I wanted to give some time to a brother of mine. As we all know, it is Asian and Pacific Islanders Appreciation Month, and a lot of my AAPA brothers and sisters are doing great work in the hockey space, and I wanted to highlight and speak to one right now. He's the brains behind the program Hockey for Youth. Welcome to the show, Mo Hassam. Mo, my brother, how are you, my friend? Thank you for joining the show.
Kwame, thank you for having me. I mean, come on, Kenan Thompson and then Mo Hassam. This is just episodes piling on top.
Back-to-back hits, brother. That's all we do around here, back-to-back hits. First off, how are you and your family doing? I mean, it's crazy times with COVID and lockdown, especially here in Ontario, but I just wanted to check in and make sure you guys are doing great. How's everybody doing?
You know what? We're grateful. You know, my wife is a medical professional. She's a dentist. And, you know, I think one of the challenging things for us is she was just in the middle of constructing her dental clinic when the pandemic hit in downtown Toronto. And, you know, fortunately, because she's a healthcare provider, we were able to get through that process. And, you know, we're just grateful. And we have a lot of friends who are physicians and nurses and in the healthcare sector and PSWs. And I wish everyone safety. I mean, this is such a, you know, difficult time for a lot of people. A lot of people have lost loved ones. So, you know, my heart goes out to everybody. And I want us to continue to, you know, help each other out as best as we can. And the kids that we work with too. I mean, we work in high priority neighborhoods and in Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal. And, you know, I want everyone to be safe. I want everyone to come out of this on the other side.
So let's start from the beginning. Where did you get your passion for hockey? Where did that come from? And when did you get turned on to the game?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'll back up a little bit and tell you a little bit about my family history. So, you know, we're South Asian. My grandfather was born in India. Both grandfathers were born in India. But my dad was actually born in Uganda. And so, you know, I have roots in Africa and East Africa specifically. Mm-hmm. My mom is from Pakistan. And my parents came here in 1972 as refugees from Uganda. I was born in 1977 in Vancouver. And I'm the youngest of four siblings. And where it came from was really, it's kind of innocuous, right? My mom went to go see Stars on Ice. she went with my older brother and older sister. And so she knew what skating was. And I used to play, you know, road hockey outside all the time. And a neighbor of ours, Mrs. Brown, who still lives across the street from my mom to this day, she gave her older son's equipment to me. And she, you know, said to my parents, hey, why don't you register Moisine into hockey? And that's where it all started for me. I was 6 years old. I can remember vividly stepping out on the ice for the first time, you know, falling on my butt, but just instantly falling in love with the sport. And, you know, I got a chance to play. Like, we didn't have a lot of money. You know, it was very, very difficult for my parents, but I got a chance to play. My sister, Shaliza, figure skated for a couple of years. My brother Nazim joined at the age of 12. He joined ice hockey, and that's a tough age to join. Mm-hmm. And my eldest brother Nizam never had the opportunity, you know, like we just didn't have it. But my parents made it work for me. And then I played right through minor hockey, and I played at the University of Northern British Columbia and Prince George. Wow. So, you know, that really was, you know, how my hockey experience came to be.
How about your peers? How were you accepted in your neighborhood, on the ice? And hopefully you had a good overall experience in your years playing hockey.
Yeah, you know, like my teams were pretty diverse. You know, I remember playing with guys, you know, nobody would know these guys, but I remember playing with Baldeep Gill and the Kara brothers. So my team was fairly diverse coming out of East Vancouver. But when we would go out to, you know, Abbotsford or Langley or North or West Vancouver or the west side of the city, I mean, we were playing against teams that were predominantly white. Mm. So, you know, my experiences with hockey were generally pretty good. Of course, I did face racism, just like a lot of players of color. And, you know, it didn't define me. For sure, I remember those experiences. But, you know, hockey to me was always about the sport. Like, even when I went off to university, my team was pretty diverse, even though we were in Prince George. But then when we would play the teams in that men's Division One, I mean, my God, like you face those difficult games and racial taunts and stuff, but you kind of move on, right? You gotta keep your head in the game, and that's what I always try to do. Although my friends might differ, you know, I'm a smaller guy, I'm a fast guy, but you know, I've had my fair share run-ins, but I've always loved the sport.
Yeah. So let's fast forward to present day. Explain the program Hockey for Youth and its origin.
Yeah, this is it's an interesting story. You know, so my background's in corporate philanthropy, right? So I worked for TELUS for a number of years, building out their corporate philanthropy strategies. And then I went off to a charitable organization based out of Vancouver that was working with kids in the downtown east side. So that's where I kind of started to understand what the game could be like. Mm. I in fact went with, it's an organization called Heroes, and I actually went with them to their program in Northern Ireland. So I got a chance to even coach hockey to Catholic and Protestant kids. You know, you bring them together. We had kids from the South in Dublin that we bring them up to the North. And by the end of it, you know, British military kids were involved. Now, the one thing is for me is, when I stepped away from Heroes, I took some time off, right? I went to travel East Africa with my dad. And it was 2013-14, and my dad and I were traveling through East Africa, through his hometowns, and I had that conversation with him. I said, "Dad, what did you want to do when you were younger?" Mm-hmm. And he always, you know, talked about giving back to the community, being a type of pastor in the community. I'm a Ismaili Muslim. And so he wanted to be in that position, but he couldn't do it, you know, just circumstance, life circumstances. So I told my dad, I said, "This is what I want to do. I want to start an organization that focuses on teenagers, specifically mm-hmm. newcomers." And my dad said, "Go for it. So when you get back to Canada, you go for it, go and do it." Mm-hmm. And so that was the step one. Step two, when I was dating my wife, her name's Monica. So I was with the Pan Am Games, and Monica said, "Wait, once you're done with the Pan Am Games, what are you going to do?" And I said, "I want to start this hockey initiative." Now, we were dating. We'd been 6 months into our relationship. That's a big matzo ball to drop out there. Mm-hmm. But she was supportive. She said, how can I help? What can I do to make this, you know, happen? And then I'd say the third person that, you know, really kind of greenlighted this project was Paul Hillman. He's the curriculum lead at Mark Carnot Collegiate, which is in a high priority neighborhood of Thorncliffe, Flemington Park here in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And when I pitched him the idea, he said, let's make it happen. Yeah. And then I would just tell you that, you know, as you go through the process, you start to see the impact that you're having on these kids.
You know what, brother? I mean, those are just great origin stories. And of course, you know, big shout out to your wife, because you know, the strong women are the ones that always hold down the men to get these ideas going forward. And, you know, big shout out to your father, because I know your father is no longer with us, but, you know, that's the thing about our parents. They give us that confidence to go forward and do great things, as you are doing right now. And you guys have an off-ice aspect to your program. You want to explain Teach to everybody?
Yeah, so one of the most important things for me when we started Hockey for Youth was I wanted to make sure that newcomer and high priority kids had a pathway to learning. You know, we talk about the sport and we talk about how much love we have for the sport, but we don't often think about who's being left out. And when it comes to the Teach program, we don't often think about the barriers that exist for young newcomers. You know, so the Teach program was really designed to give them experiential learning pathways so that they could learn about technology, entrepreneurship, the arts, community giving, and healthy active living. And within each of those verticals, we try and do something special so that young people, you know, get a chance to see, hey, there's a career opportunity here for me. So for example, we've done, you know, financial literacy training with the Junior Economic Club of Canada. We've done that for the last 5 years. Last year, we took a bunch of our Toronto kids down to Ryerson University to spend the day on campus. But the one thing that we did differently is the speakers we brought in, they weren't necessarily from the university. Like one of our speakers is a lady by the name of Joan McDonald. She's 75 years old. She's a bodybuilder and she has over 1 million followers on Instagram.
Wow.
You know, so just getting out those messages to these young people that, hey, we're not just going to do hockey with you, but we're going to support you at every step of the way, just to make sure that, you know, you have doors that are open for you. And I think hockey as that starting point is a great way to open doors. You know, when I think about these newcomer kids and I think about, you know, 5 years down the road when they're maybe going in for a job interview and they start dropping their experience about playing hockey or getting involved in the game, you know, that's going to open doors for them. And I think that's so important because hockey is ingrained in Canadian culture.
Yeah, I think that's huge, man. Your kids, they've, you know, been a part of a lot of great news articles. They've been on TV, like Hockey Night in Canada. These kids are inspiring, being able to see them out there. Talk about how a young boy by the name of Eden inspired you guys for your fundraising program, Campaign 125, and how can kids or parents listening right now get involved?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll touch on a couple of things here before I get to Eben's story, because you asked about the kids that are on TV or that we've given them opportunities to share their stories. So that comes down to that Teach program that I talked about. Here's an experience that we want our kids to have, which is telling their stories, right? I want them to be able to tell their stories the way that I'm sharing my story. And what I always love to do when I'm on a podcast or on a panel is to talk about the kids. You know, Brittany, who's from Jamaica, she joined us in December of 2017. And the first day she was on the ice, she didn't fall, you know. And fast forward, she's been with us for the last 4 years. She's got a chance to skate with Mitch Marner. CBC, the National, called once and said, hey, Quinton Byfield just got drafted number 2 overall. Do you have a kid who could talk about the impact of Quinton being drafted? And I thought about that for a second. I said, well, who could I get? I reached out to Brittany. I said, do you think you would want to do this? And she said, absolutely. And she delivered such a passionate response about diversity and inclusion in this country and how if that's what we want to do, then the impact of Quinton being drafted is so critically important. You know, another story is Khaled and Abrar, brother and sister from Syria, right? They arrive in 2016. Khaled joins us in 2016, and then his sister Abrar joins us in 2017. They were featured on Hockey Night in Canada. And what a great story, right? Coming as refugees from a war-torn country, but then getting involved in hockey. Mm-hmm. It's gotten to the point where Abrar and I are working on a special hockey project, which I will tell you about at a future date in the fall when we launch it. But Khaled's story is fascinating. He's now working in the same homeless shelter where his parents and his family were first put when they arrived on Canadian soil.
Oh, wow.
So he's graduated high school and his summer job is working with homeless people. And during the pandemic, like, what an impactful story. You know, I think about Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, a young lady by the name of Hong, who came here from Vietnam in 2017. This little girl, she a little woman now, but she's 5 foot nothing. She's with us for 2 years and was our captain in the second year. You know, she started recruiting more newcomer kids. So I think about the impact that these young people are not only having on their peers, but also on their communities. And right. that's what we want to see out of the sport. I know you asked about Eben. Like, this is an 11-year-old kid who plays minor hockey. His dad emailed me in December and said Eben wanted to donate $25 to your organization. And I said, okay, this is fantastic. And he gave me the whole story about why it meant so much to Eben. You know, Eben is Black, and you know, he's the only Black kid on his team. And this is where he felt like he wanted to donate his allowance. What was touching about that and what I wanted to do, and I talked to Eben's dad, Sid. I said, look, I want to create a ripple effect here. You know, there's a small connection to Uganda. I don't know how this happened, but my dad had just passed away. It was really emotional for me, and I was talking to Sid, and Sid ended up in Uganda 15 years ago doing some work, some missionary work. And for my dad to pass the way he did, he talked about giving back. And then, so when this happened with Eben, I was like, what is going on here? And I knew, you know, that hand was working in there. So we launched this initiative called Campaign 125. We're trying to get 100 people to pledge $25 a month so that we can continue to do the work that we're doing and we can expand to other cities.
Yeah. So let's talk about how people can get involved, where they need to go to if they want to be a part of Campaign 125.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things I can say to you there. I think one place that they should go is Instagram, because that's where we post all these stories. So at Hockey for Youth with the number 4, as you can see up here, and on Instagram, that's where you'll get to see all these stories of these great kids. They can go to our website, www.hockeyforyouth.org/donate. And that's where you can make your donation. And in the dropdown, you'll see the initiative, you know, Campaign 125. What's important, I think, for the viewers and listeners to know is that hockey's so expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Costs like $4,000 to put an 11 to 17 year old in 1 year of hockey. And so what we've done is we've removed all those barriers, right? 71% of newcomers express an interest in playing hockey, but only 1% will have an opportunity to do so. So again, we've removed those barriers. We provide them with the equipment. It's free. On-ice coaching, free. The off-ice teach program, free. Field trips that we do are free. And individual donations are important, but I got to tell you, Kwame, like we couldn't have been here without our first grant that came from MLSE Foundation. You know, we got a $50,000 grant in 2017. That really kind of spurred us on. And then, you know, we've been working with the NHLPA. Recently, they and Sonnet Insurance donated ice time and equipment for our programs in Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal. You know, we had the Chris Goy Memorial Fund. This is a family that lost their 30-year-old son last summer, and they raised $44,000 to get more programs going here in the GTHA. You know, so all of these partners are so critically important to us. I mean, Canadian Tire Jumpstart has been with us since day one. You know, these are important partners. I mean, the NHL has been so supportive. You know, so we want to bring more people into the mix. We know that we can expand to more cities across Canada. Mm-hmm. I field calls all the time, you know, people saying, hey, when can you get a program in my community? And the more people we get on this program, the more volunteers we get, the more donations we get, the more we can do to help people. And I think that's a benefit to the country of Canada.
And I guess, you know, ultimately your plan is to get it, you know, across Canada, but is there any thoughts of taking this program to the United States as well?
Yeah, you know, that's it. The reason why I took a second there to breathe is there, you know, we are working on something.
Good.
I think that, you know, with everything that happened last year, you know, there is an opportunity for us. And I know there's great organizations down in the States that are doing this type of work. And I just think that we can be part of that, you know, mix, and we can really step up and help more communities. Like, I think the thing with hockey is we don't realize how many people are being left out.
Yeah.
You know, like there's Amerigoal, which is a great organization that's run out of Florida. There's the American Special Hockey Association and Jen O'Brien. Like, she does a bunch of great work with special hockey. And there's a lot of great organizations that are doing advocacy work, you know, Black Girl Hockey Club and the HDA and all these organizations. But I think for us, what's critically important is I want to get in there and do the programming. Mm-hmm. I want to step up and be able to bring this program to more communities. And it's funny that you mentioned the US, because our first two athlete ambassadors are Curtis McDermott and Akil Thomas, your boy, Akil.
I know that kid. I
know. You know, they're our first two athlete ambassadors, and funny, coming out of the LA Kings organization. And, you know, so we will get there. We're working on a plan. But I also know that there's a lot of communities across Canada that we want to serve. You know, I think about my university town of Prince George, or a city like Medicine Hat, Alberta, like Nova Scotia, getting out there. There's a lot of places where we want to grow. And I appreciate this platform that you've provided to us.
Thank you.
You know, thank you. We want to get the message out there, man.
And that's what it's all about. So one more time, Mo, for anybody listening right now that wants to get involved, donate, volunteer, exactly where do they need to go right now?
All right. So right now you need to go to hockey4youth.org. That's hockey, the number 4youth.org/donate, and, you know, get involved. No amount is too small for us. We really work hard to make sure that, you know, we're getting programs going. You know, without support, we can't grow. There's a great story I got to just quickly share with you, that in Ottawa, when we launched our first two girls only programs, mm-hmm. It was February of 2020. So right before the pandemic, we have 53 newcomer girls out on the ice. It's remarkable, from two high schools in Ottawa. But one of the greatest stories that has come out of that is a young lady by the name of Jamila. She's from Mauritania. She is now claiming to be the first female hockey player out of Mauritania. Mm-hmm. And I love it. She ended up on the NHLPA Sonnet insurance commercial for Everyone Deserves a Team.
Yeah.
She's featured in that commercial. And that to me is absolutely remarkable. And that's the power of the sport. And, you know, we just want to continue to open up the sport, man. Like, we want to make it inclusive and safe for young people. And again, I just thank you so much for everything that you're doing to open up the game through the Soul on Ice podcast. It's awesome to be a part of this. So thank you.
And that's what it is, brother. Thank you so much for sharing that story. I know you're going to like our next guest coming up. He's a Stanley Cup champion, the El Presidente, the man in charge in LA, Luke Robitaille. So Mo, thank you very again. Thank you very much again, and good luck in the future, brother. I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you too. And I guess I'm the opener for Luke. So Luke, you better not disappoint, man.
That's it. That's it. Luke Robitaille up next. And our next guest hails from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, drafted to the LA Kings in 1984, where he scored 45 goals, 39 assists, 79 games to earn the Calder Memorial Trophy for the NHL's top rookie. He's played with some of the greatest hockey players in history. He's played for the Kings, the Penguins, the Rangers, won a Stanley Cup with the Detroit Red Wings. I like to call him El Presidente of the Los Angeles Kings. My soul brothers and soul sisters, please welcome to the show Hall of Famer Luke Robitaille. Luke, thank you for joining me, my friend.
Hey, bud, how are you? Good to see you.
Yeah, well, I'm doing
great. You got me in my car.
Yes, I'm in the Robitaille whip. Where are you heading right now? Where are you going to?
I'm actually heading home. So the way I've split my schedule, I usually go at the rink. We test every day. So I go at the rink meet with all of our guys, and then I'll go home and do all of my meetings with our business staff in the afternoon. So I kind of split the two, because none of our business staff is at our practice facility, so we could do through Zoom or Teams call. That's what we do it.
How you guys been dealing with the COVID? You know, I know it's kind of, you guys have a very strict policy going on, but you know, how are you managing it?
We're, you know, it's the same for everyone. It's not easy. I mean, it was, it's something you got to follow every day. You got to keep up, the protocol change. It seems like it changed every 2-3 days. And, you got to protect the players first and then protecting everyone. And it's one of those things that I feel our entire organization has been as good as could be. And still we've had a few players with COVID. We haven't had too many staff members, knock on wood.
Good.
But it's just the way it is. It's a new way of life that we've had to adapt.
Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about this a little bit before we started the intro, but you know, I want to go back to you being drafted in the 9th round in 84, and you're one of the top 100 greatest NHL players. You're on that list. So what lessons can young players learn from a guy who was drafted so low but became one of the greatest NHL players ever? And I think this makes more sense right now because we're in a pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, I think I always go back to, what are you willing to do that other people are not willing to do? You know, like for me, I remember I played in the NHL and I was trying to get better every day, and I never took anything for granted. I do believe that it doesn't matter which round you're drafted. If you're the only difference between being drafted in the first, second round is you might get one or two extra chance than a guy drafted in the 4th or 5th round, or 7th round for today. 9th doesn't exist where I was drafted. But I always looked at it like my name was on a list and it was up to me to make a difference now. You know, like I knew I wasn't going to be looked upon like a top prospect, but they had my name on the list. They had to invite me to camp. So if I went to camp and I was the best player, no matter what happened, they'd keep me. And that's what happened. I mean, people forget, like, I got drafted in the 9th round in 1984. And I remember I looked at it and I was trying to find something positive about it. And I looked at the list. The Kings had 12 round that year. They picked no left winger. So I thought, well, I'm at least the first left winger picked. I'm their first picked left wing, even though it was a 9th round. Now, to my biggest shock, that summer, they signed a college free agent left winger. So I was like, oh, man, that's my competition. Mm-hmm. And then the very next year, I'm watching the 1st round on TV, and he's had picked 8 and 9, and they picked 2 left wings in the 1st round. So I was like, oh, suddenly the competition was a little bit more fierce. And of all those guys, I ended up being the one that played in the NHL, because I do believe today I was willing to pay a price higher than them as far as trying to get better every day. And that goes to the other day I was joking with some guys. When I was 38 years old, I took a power skating lesson in the summer to try to improve my skating. I was laughing that, what was I thinking trying to improve my skating at 38 years old, you know? But that was my thinking.
Yeah.
I was always trying to get better every year, and that's why I played like 20 years.
No days off, exactly. Which one of your past teammates chirp you the most about having a bronze statue outside the arena?
Oh, I haven't gotten chirped about that.
No.
Maybe they always come in the back door so they don't know it's there. I haven't gotten chirped too much about that. No, I can't think of anybody.
You're one of the lucky ones. Retirement sometimes can be very tricky for players. What would you have said was the most difficult part about you retiring when you did?
But I mean, first of all, there was nothing difficult about me retiring. I knew I had squeezed everything out of the lemon.
Okay.
And it was time for me. So the only thing that was fun for me is I think the last 3 months of the year, I was making my decisions. So everything became even more fun for me. Like I would look around the locker room and enjoyed every moment of watching guys chirping at each other. Like a lot of times when you're a player, you complain about little things, you know, because that's just the way we are as players. And that stopped for me. So I really got to enjoy the last few weeks or months. The one thing that we never realize how different the life is, and a lot of athletes say that when they retire, is being in the room. Mm. Being in that world, that being in the room, it's a special camaraderie. I don't really believe in real life, whether you have a job and so forth, you get what sports team get inside the locker room. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that unless you've been in that locker room for a sports team, you'll never get that kind of fun feeling of being every day, you know, paying a price to help each other and then joking and the teasing and the funny stuff. That's the one thing I think every one of us always talk about. Like, you know, you miss that.
Speaking of paying the price, that series in 93 against the Leafs, the conference finals, what's one of the things that stood out to you the most? Because that series was intense and that series still haunts Toronto fans to this day.
You go to game 7, and you got the greatest player in the world playing what he claims to be his best game ever. I mean, it's truly amazing.
Right.
And, I remember people put down Wayne at the beginning of the series. And next thing you know, he turned it up. And we got to see the greatest player in the world at his peak. It was with the amount of pressure he had was absolutely – it's incredible. Obviously, Marty McSorley knowing time in the game to do something. I mean, he, you know, fighting Wendell Clark, hitting Doug Gilmore there, which it was never going to change Doug Gilmore's game. Doug Gilmore is one of the toughest players, but still, it was a statement for us as a team, as an organization. And it was pretty amazing what he did. And I think people forget that Daryl like said, Nick, and we had a second-year defenseman in Rob Blake. I mean, we had a really, really young, 3D out of 6 that played in those games that should have been technically or theoretically should have carried us for the next 10 years. Unfortunately, it didn't, but it should have. But like, I mean, it was an amazing series to be part of, though.
For those who don't know, that series is very infamous for one reason, the non-call against Gretzky, game 6. Was that even, and I know people have talked to you about this and I'm sure you've heard it all over. And, has anybody ever asked you if you guys spoke about that non-call in the dressing room at dinner weeks, years later? Have you guys had those one-on-ones about that?
No, because I think we've never even talked about it. Because when you're on the winning side, you don't talk about it. It's probably like Montreal never talking about the illegal curve.
Right.
Like when in the next series when we got beat and they call it the illegal curve, they probably never even think about it because for them, they score in a power play.
Right.
Could have been any power play and then they score in OT. For us, we just like it was an accident. The referee missed it. It happens. A lot,
all the time,
especially in those days, there was only one referee, and the linesmen were, they had to clearly see it for a linesman to call it. So, it happened a lot in those days. It happened 50% less probably today, or even maybe 80% less because there's more eyes on it, But it happened a lot in those days, so we never thought about it. Never did. No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys, like you said, you came on the right side of history. In your opinion, the greatest player to ever wear a Kings jersey is?
Wayne Gretzky. I mean, there's no, it's not just what Wayne did when he came in Los Angeles. He not only changed LA hockey, but he changed hockey altogether. I mean, people forget that when Wayne came to LA, for the next 3 years, we barely played any preseason games in LA. We played in every possible new market in North America. Like we played in Miami, in Tampa Bay. I remember playing the biggest crowd in a baseball stadium in Tampa Bay. Remember when they came on board, they started playing at that stadium. Yeah. We played in Cleveland. We played in Phoenix, in Dallas, in Houston. We played like a, we played up in San Jose. We played, you know, next thing you know, there was a team in Anaheim, a team in San Jose, a team in Dallas, a team in Phoenix, you know, then a team in Tampa, a team in, I remember playing in Miami and selling out the building. And it was all based on the back of Wayne. You know, it probably would have happened, but not within the next, you know, 6 or 7 years, which is, you got to give all the credit to Wayne Gretzky playing in LA and making it a very successful franchise.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily all about like trophies or awards and stuff like that. No. It's just his mere presence.
Changing the game altogether. Yeah. Cause you got to remember LA was in LA from 1967 up to 1988. And there was only still, you know, there were a couple teams like they had a team up north for a little bit and they had left. And it's still, there was no teams anywhere on the Southern Belt in the U.S. And then Wayne shows up and then boom, it explodes.
Yeah.
That's, you got to give him all the credit.
I always refer to that, we're in this D&I space and we're trying to grow the game and, you know, a lot of young black athletes are getting opportunities that they've never had before. And I always look at what Wayne Gretzky did for hockey, especially in the California area. And I think about the young black player and I'm always hoping for that day that young black player comes in and transforms the game to make it as popular as, say, what Wayne Gretzky did. And I think, you know, you guys probably have one of the best chances of producing a player like that, especially being in the California area, to really, really help grow the game. Do you ever think about stuff like that on your day-to-days?
You know, we're always trying to grow the game in LA. That's the one thing that we're constantly focused on. We know we have a big amount of hockey fans, but it's not like they grew up playing hockey. So we're always looking at ways. But, you know, when your team has success and some players have success and they're willing to help, you know, you could definitely make a big difference. So, you know, we have you're referring to Quinton Byfield and obviously Akil Thomas. They're coming into our organization. If these kids keep going their projection and if they are the players that we expect them to be, and at the same time, we surround them well and the team has success, yeah, I really believe they can make a big difference on just influencing a lot of young people to get attracted to hockey.
What does growing the game of hockey mean to you?
Just having more new players. I mean, it doesn't mean to me they have to reach the ultimate level, just for them to enjoy playing the game. I mean, one of the greatest things about hockey is it's a great team game. You really need to be a good teammate to be successful. It's all about giving goals. It's about, you know, the camaraderie, you know, in the locker room and the way you play as a team to have fun. So because of the values of hockey, put aside the fighting part, which doesn't exist anymore at any level until you reach the pro level, you know, and we see the stats going away year after year. Everything else about hockey is all about you know, team, and no player is successful on his own. Wayne Gretzky, the greatest player in the game, was the greatest passer, mm-hmm. you know, and he ended up being one of the greatest goal scorer. I mean, the greatest goal scorer, but that's because he was such a great teammate. So it just shows you that's where the value is about hockey.
Talk about the Alliance, Los Angeles, and the LA Kings Inclusion Initiative, and how those two groups got together and why.
We've been talking. I mean, we're always very proactive. You know, we always want to make a difference. And when we hear about new groups coming on, yeah, we want to work with everyone and help. Like, I mean, we've been working with YMCA now for a few years. To group, trying to get sticks in kids' hands. So to have an opportunity with the Alliance and then to work, you know, with our inclusion team. And that's definitely something we're all really focused on for us, it's been a few years. Mm-hmm. We probably didn't really have a title to it, but we've been working on it now, I think for like 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, congratulations to you and Kelly Cheeseman. You guys were a part of the Sports Business Journal's inaugural in Leaders in Diversity and Inclusion Hiring issue. You've been recognized for many things. How does this compare to the ones of the past?
Well, I always take awards when you win something. It's great when you win an award, but it's about something you've done in the past. It's what are you going to do moving forward? And I think that's what's more important. And for us, I think for many years, even me, like trying to build the LA Kings culture and the organization, I never looked at who or was it a female? Was it a male? You know, like where they were, their background or something. I was more looking at who is passionate about the game of hockey.
Dig it.
And that's where we try to hire a lot of people. I do think now we need to broaden that a little bit. We need to get people that want to get in the world of sports and then teach them a little bit if they don't really understand the game of hockey. Because that's easy, especially when you come on the business side. Because there's one thing I know you can't teach is passion. Passion right. for your job, for what you want to do. Because when you really want to do something, you always want to get better, mm-hmm. you know. And so that's probably the one thing that we've broadened that a little bit that will help us be a better organization. And at the same time, it will give more breaks to a lot of kids.
Yeah.
I refer to kids because, mm-hmm. you know, that a lot of times that's who – you know, you want to start in sports you want to become a higher position. Usually you come out of college or you've been a few years. Some guys have been working at banks for a few years, but they're still in their late 20s at the latest or early 30s and so forth. You know, so that's why I refer to them as kids, I guess, because I'm getting old.
we all are getting there, my brother. So in that light, I think it's very interesting that you say that you're just looking for somebody that's passionate in your work. You're not necessarily looking at woman, color, whatever. You just want somebody that's best for the job. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that needs to be said about hiring, especially when it comes to diversity and inclusion, because you first want to hire somebody that is capable of the job and has a passion for what they do. And the passion for the game can be grown, but they gotta be passionate about what they do first and foremost. So, you know, did you feel like at the time, and I'm sure it's an easy answer, but do you feel that hiring Blake was a bold decision on your part at that time? Because you hired her before this whole inclusive awakening happened that we see today.
Well, hiring Blake Bolden was not a bold decision. It was a easy decision. I clearly remember meeting her, and we're all like, wow.
First of all, wait, before you go on, who do you remember who introduced you to her?
You're going to say you? Right by the Zamboni door,
correct? That's right.
And But I think there was another lady that introduced me. She was a little quicker than you. I'm just joking.
No, because I remember it like clear as day because we were back.
Yeah, no, I remember.
Seeing you come, and I was like, Blake, you got to, you know, and only because I had met you previously, I thought it would be okay enough for me to introduce you to her. But yeah, you know, besides that, who cares? That's
yeah.
That's,
but what makes Blake special is her passion, for her work, or obviously her work ethic, and her passion for her work. It had nothing to do with her color or her being a female. It had to do with you meet her and you're like, oh boy, mm-hmm. this person is special. And she's shown that and more. I mean, she's willing to do more, and she understands at the same time that she can and will and is making a difference mm-hmm. every day by what mm-hmm. she's doing. But that being said, you ask our hockey ops, which, you know, they just, when you're on the hockey ops side or you run a sports franchise, you got to win. At the end of the day, you got to win. You got to get better than the other team. And they look at her reports. They look at the work she does. When the doors close, when no one's paying attention, Blake Bolden has unbelievable scouting reports, as an example, for our hockey ops when they're looking at her reports. And she does all of her work and more. Mm-hmm. And then when the doors close and you're talking to our people who are doing the hockey development, like, and they're doing an event, they're like, yeah, Blake drove all the way and did this clinic for these, whatever. It could be 20 kids. It could be 10. It could be 5. And she was amazing on the ice. Everybody related to her. What a great coach. Mm-hmm. You see, so there's the one side that people hear about her, not how she's doing, but there's the one side that she's really doing the work mm-hmm. here. She's outworking everyone, mm-hmm. you know, which that's why she's going to have tremendous amount of success in the sports world. Mm-hmm. You know, like what makes Crosby one of the greatest superstars is work ethic.
Right.
And that's how it's the same in sport. It's the same in management. It's the same, you know, whoever is willing to work harder than the other ones, if they have common sense, they're going to be very successful. And she has all that.
Well, that's our theme of this podcast is the work ethic. I'm loving that. So sometimes I like to challenge people's thinking. We are witnessing the biggest shift in hockey ever with a heavy focus on diversity and inclusion from all groups. Why do you think this is happening now? Why not 5, 10, 15 years ago? What has turned the light on in the industry to finally say, yes, we need to change the way we do business. We need to be more inclusive.
I mean, obviously the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, there's more information gets out there. And by the way, I think it's about time. You know, I do believe though that, you know, you look at GMs and president owners for years, everybody just talks that we got to win, you know, just got to win. That's all that matters. And now what I think people are realizing, and there's a lot of great people that you could go get that. Maybe even there were some people that didn't really want to throw their name out there in the past. And now they're willing to throw their name out there. Like we're seeing a lot more females getting hired, but they're throwing their name out there. They're going, hey, I could do this. I could do. And people are like a lot of people are listening. And once you get them in the room, you interview them, you realize, wow, this person is really, really good. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening. But definitely, Kwame, like what's happening in our society now, there's a shift and it's about time. And I think it's only going to make, you know, the sports better, our league better. And I mean, it bodes for great things to happen in the future, in the next 10 years.
When I've talked to a lot of ex-NHL players, Black players, and even some of the guys who are currently playing and one of the things they've always said to me is that, you know, in playing the game of hockey, at least in the past, they were always afraid to speak up if something happened to them on the ice or in the locker room or from someone in the stands, because they felt there would be repercussions to their ice time or being labeled as troublesome. When you hear something like that, because of the years you've played hockey, how does that make you feel to know that guys like Anson Carter or Kevin Weeks or Georges Laroque or Sean Brown might have felt like they can't express themselves because if they do, they would be labeled?
It's disappointing. I mean, it shouldn't happen. I mean, we should have all seen it, you know, but, you know, and it's disappointing. It shouldn't happen. It shouldn't have been like that. And I don't know, you know, what else to say. You know, it's just, you know, Anson Carter should have never felt bad about speaking out about things happening or things being said to him. I mean, it should have never happened. It did, and it's the reality, and I think we all need to be aware of it.
Yeah, especially going forward, so that these young kids like Quentin and Akil and, you know, all of them, they feel that they're in a secure space or in a safe space.
Where, absolutely. You know, yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing. So, you know, talking about QB, Quentin Byfield, you know, before you guys drafted him, a lot of the sports writers and the sports heads, they weren't sure if he was going to go second. They were thinking maybe third. Having the second pick, did you guys know this is the kid you wanted? Was there any hesitation? What did you see about him that really made you guys excited about having?
Well, there was no hesitation, but as an organization, you got to do your homework.
Yeah.
So we looked at all the players available and we always went back to Quentin, and we really liked what he brought to his team every day, his work ethic, the way he plays the game. You know, he plays, we call it a 200-foot game, you know, both end. Obviously, his speed, his size. And when you look at him, and, you know, he's a beast out there. And he's, you know, he just turned 18 last August, you know, and his tool set as a player and an athlete are incredible. His sense of the game is really highly developed. So plus, you know, we heard and knew he's a really good person. Mm-hmm. And that was important for us to get a really good person. And because when you pick second overall, you know, if you don't miss, those guys have an impact on your franchise for years and years and years. So we know this is not a player that's just going to be with us for 4 or 5 years. You know, you hope he's going to play with you for 15 years plus. And so it's important to pick the right person that can help you. You always try to build a team to win a championship. And we feel he was the best player to help us for the future, giving us that chance.
Yeah. Just got a couple more questions for you, but what was the scouting report on young Akil Thomas?
Well, highly skilled player. It is funny. Highly skilled player, could play physical, plays a good all-around game. You know, he could score a goal, he could finish. At the time, guys weren't sure about giving it, like being the same player, like in day in and day out. And I got to give Akil credit. He's playing the American League this year. And this guy, he hasn't taken one night off.
Right.
Every time I sit, because I kind of sit in those meetings post game, and the coach has never said a bad word. I mean, he goes out there, blocks shots, kills penalties, plays on the power play. One game they play him center. The next game they play left wing. The next game they play him right. Never said a word. Goes out there, does his job better than anyone. I'll tell you what, when players are like that and they do that for your team, you know you got the right player with the right attitude. And we, like I said to you, we talk about getting players that are going to help us, you know, give us a chance to win a cup. You want players like that. If you can have 20 guys like that, oh my God, you're going to win a lot of games. So I give him credit. It's all him doing it the right way. And he's a very, very special player. And I really see him having a very long, great career.
Where, okay. So I want you to describe your moment, World Juniors. You're watching the tournament. Akil's not getting played a lot, but you know, the times he was playing, he was pretty effective. That final game, what were your thoughts before he jumped on the ice and when he jumped on the ice?
Well, I actually, to come back on the tournament, I thought throughout the entire tournament, I really liked the way he played, because I know what it is to play for Team Canada, because sometimes people don't realize how hard it is. You're in junior major, you're playing 20 minutes a game.
Yeah.
The hardest thing for a player to do is to go from 20 minutes a game to like 12,
right.
10. Some games he would play less. But every time he went on the ice, he made a difference. Every time Akil Thomas jumped on the ice for Team Canada, that tournament, he made a difference. And it was just sometimes, you know, you don't understand why didn't he play much more, but the team was winning and there's games that are, the score is really high. But he was blocking shots. He was killing penalties. I mean, he was doing so many little things that as a teammate, you know, when you win, you go to that guy, go, you are the difference maker. Yeah. So for me, before he even got the goal winner, he was one of their best players because of the role he was given to. He took it and ran with it. He showed everyone, say, I'll do anything to help us win, which is amazing. And then on top of it, he jumps on the ice, you know, and he goes and he scores. He just showed his touch. Obviously, that was not an easy goal to score.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed his touch. I was really, really happy for him because he got rewarded for all the sacrifice he did for the 4 or 5 games prior.
Did you jump out of your seat as well? Were you screaming?
Oh, yeah. I was really happy for him.
Yeah. Hey, man, listen, I really appreciate you spending the time with me and chopping it up on the podcast. Of course, you know, usually it's Akil and Elijah, and the only reason why those two boys weren't here is because, you know, the scheduling issues, and Akil's working. He's working.
They got to work.
He's got to work.
Tell him I'm pissed, though. He should have had me as a guest in the summer.
I will deliver that. But you know what? We're definitely going to have you back. What I want to do is have you back on the show with Blake and the boys, and we can all just have a good time and have some fun there. But before I let you go, and we're going to, you know what, I usually ask for top fives, but we're going to save your top five for when you come back on the show with Akil.
All right.
Elijah.
Okay.
Here's what I wanted to say to you before I let you go. You know, I made the film Soul on Ice, Past, Present, and Future. And I always make sure that I show my appreciation to those people in that journey who have done something nice for me. And that year that I showed the film in LA, that's the first time I kind of toured the film throughout America. And the LA Kings were gracious enough to have us show the film. And there weren't a lot of people in the stands at that showing, but we had a good little group of people there. Mm-hmm. And you sat beside me and you watched it. And I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciated you actually paying attention to that film with me when you didn't even have to do that. You could have easily just said, yeah, they want to do the film, let them do the film, and great, thank you very much. But you actually took the time to sit there and take the film. And so I wanted to thank you very from the bottom of my heart for that.
Well, you know, my thing is, though, whenever anything is done about hockey, I think we all have, you know, to support each other. We all have to help. And it's all good to, like we talked earlier about the growth of the game. So anytime we have a chance to do something, we have to do it together. Yeah. We have to stick together, you know, and that's like you're good for us. You love the game of hockey. You're always trying to promote the game of hockey. And it's for me, that's the only way we're going to grow. So we got to have as many people that understand that and try to help. And that's all we're going to help keep growing the game.
And I'll tell people this last, it's my little funny story. I've shared this with you before. You probably don't remember it, but I tease Akil about this all the time.
Hold on, let's hear it.
But when we watched the film, at the very end of the film, I turned to you and I said, see that kid right there? He's going to be a draft. He's going to play in the NHL. You guys need to pay attention to that kid right there. That kid who I pointed you to was Akil Thomas.
The only reason we picked him because you told me.
See?
I swear, no lie. That's why Pinocchio.
That's why I tell Akil. I said, Akil, you owe me a lot of money down the road, bro.
That's right. You tell Akil like he owes you. I'll stick with you on that one.
Lou Robitaille, thank you so much for joining the podcast, man. I really appreciate you. Have yourself a great day, my brother.
All right. Thank you, my friend. Good to see you.
That was Luke Robitaille, everybody. Pretty good guy to hang out with on the show. It's really cool doing this podcast and being able to speak to so many influential people in the world of hockey. I mean, that's a Hall of Famer. That guy he's been in the mix, and so much fun just chopping it up with the El Presidente. Big shout out to all the employees over at the LA Kings organization. Thank you guys for making this happen, connecting me with Luke. And I can't wait to do a show with Luke, Blake, and Akil on there with Elijah so we can all have some fun. I think that would be a really cool program. So we're going to make sure that we do that during the off season for sure. I don't know when, but I promise you we will do that. And another thing that I'm going to promise you is that we will be back next week with another great show. And thank you so much for always joining us and listening. And we always ask that you subscribe, rate, and review, and also hit us up on all of our social media platforms. Soul on Ice, the podcast. Give us a like, give us a mention, tell a friend, and spread the word, because without you, we can't grow this thing the way we want to. And we really appreciate you guys joining us each and every week. For Elijah Roberts, Akil Thomas, and Brother B, our Minister of Social Information, my name is Kwame, and we will check you back here next week. We are out.
And when we make it, we gonna put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Yeah. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice. You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Trees are dusting, fussing, fighting with myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry of my power. Statistic of my weakness, shadow boxing with Tyson. I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table, it's time for lunch. Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie, progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They sold a show and older, they live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali, he changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee, it's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need ya, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Let's dedicate this one to Jaden Linda. Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinto. Or maybe you prefer that Benz. Why that big truck? I don't give a f. Only really want a house where to get by. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense. It's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the past from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. Young. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through.
nice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Nice.